As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Another edition of the Metrospective. Pete McCarthy with Tim Britton. And as the Mets move forward here, we talked about some of the questions regarding some individual players going into this offseason. But the biggest decision, and maybe the first decision that this organization will make, centers around Brody Van Wagenen. And Tim, you wrote a column this week about whether Brody should stay or go, the positives and negatives on both sides of the argument, and certainly seems like you don't think that keeping Brody is the best way forward.
Well, yeah, I looked at various elements of it. You know, first of all, this is we're now into the second week of the offseason. The Mets did not have kind of your traditional first week review of the season. We usually get a Jeff Wilpon or usually it's Jeff Wilpon and the general manager and Brody Van Wagenen. We got neither of those guys last week. You understand that because of the situation, but it's still worth mentioning that, you know, whereas other teams are doing their kind of end of season reviews in public and talking about what they want to do this offseason, we haven't gotten that from the Mets yet. With Van Wagenen, you know, I looked at kind of the positives, the arguments in favor of him and the arguments against him. I think there are a lot of fans who think it's a pretty straightforward decision. I don't necessarily think it's one you can make as a snap judgment because of how things have gone the last 2 years. But the bottom line analysis for me is that, you know, when you hired Brody Van Wagenen in October of 2018, there were certain elements of the job that he was that his strengths appealed to. First, chief among them, like, he works well with Jeff Wilpon. They have a good working relationship. They knew each other from their dealings with one another. That was one of his key strengths. That was one of the reasons you wanted to hire him as a general manager, was his working relationship with your COO and Jeff Wilpon. Jeff Wilpon is not going to be a part of the decision-making process moving forward, so that strength is negated. A second part of it was, like, you're trying to decide what you wanted your team to be. You wanted to extend Jacob deGrom. You had a guy here who knew what else he would be able to do as general manager, but you felt pretty darn good he was going to be able to extend Jacob deGrom, his former client, and he was able to get that done. You don't have that element there either. What you're looking for in a general manager now is someone who can work, who can complement what Sandy Alderson wants to do when he comes in as a team president in charge of the baseball operations. And there's a chance that person is Van Wagenen. I don't think it is, because it doesn't seem like him and Alderson have the same philosophies, the same backgrounds, certainly, in baseball. I don't think they're on the same wavelength necessarily about what they would want to do moving forward with this team. There's a chance it's Van Wagenen. I just think there's a much larger chance it's someone else who works better in that role moving forward. Because I think you look at this as kind of its own, it's a new process to find a general manager. It's not, should we keep him or should we dump him? It's, who's the best person? Is he a legitimate candidate for it?
Well, to add to that, you remember the Mets interviewed Chaim Bloom for the general manager position along with Doug Melvin when they ended up going with Van Wagenen. And Van Wagenen was the one who was like, we can win now, right? I don't imagine that Chaim Bloom said, yeah, we're going to, you know, go balls to the wall, win in 2019, 2020, whatever the prospect cost is. I can't imagine that's the way that Chaim Bloom would have approached things. Whereas Brody Van Wagenen, He was all in on trying to win now, and he failed. They didn't make the playoffs either of the last two seasons. They weren't especially close either of the last two seasons. I guess because it's a 60-game year, it came down to some degree to the final weekend, but it didn't really feel like a pennant race. They weren't a very good team overall. So that's the most damning thing to me with Brody Van Wagenen is he traded the best prospect in the organization in Jared Kelnick. He traded for a 35, 36-year-old second baseman in Robinson Cano, who still has 3 years remaining on his contract. These are all win-now moves that didn't pay off.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote last week in my evaluation of the Wilpons tenure that, you know, in Van Wagenen, you had a GM who said, we want to win now and win in the future. They haven't won now, and they've compromised their ability to win in the future by trying the way they did to win now.
And, easy case. Done. Right there.
And
right?
I think, whereas you can say, you know, let's take the Seattle trade, you know, obviously, as an example here. You know, there are a lot of reasons to dislike that trade. A lot of reasons I disliked that trade at the time it happened. Some of those reasons you can explain away if you're Van Wagenen. You can say, hey, you know, I one of the things I didn't like was you are paying for the back half of a 10-year contract with Robinson Cano. That's the half of the contract you don't want. It's the half of the contract you live with because you had the first half of it where you get surplus value out of a guy when you could have just given a 10-year contract to Manny Machado, who fit your roster better, who you would have gotten much more value out of at the time. Like, if you're choosing between those two things, clearly Machado is the better option. Someone who is defending Van Wagenen can say, come on, it's the Wilpons. They were never going to let him sign Machado. But so I think you can argue, and I tried to in the story on Monday, that, you know, Van Wagenen did the best he could given the constraints of this ownership. But I think there were better approaches to it. Like, certainly if you're going to trade Jared Kelenic, you don't trade him for a 70-inning closer. Like, this was the number six pick in the most recent draft. It's not like it's, oh, he was the sixth pick 5 years ago and he's stagnated. It was the number six pick 6 months earlier, and you traded him for a 70-inning closer at a time when you know you can't go out and spend big money in free agency under the Wilpons. The way to stockpile elite-level talent isn't to trade it right away. So I thought, you know, given the constraints there were of the Wilpons, there were still better ways to go about it than Van Wagenen decided to do in kind of trying to appease this win-now idea.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Another thing you did give Brody credit for was the draft. And it appears that he's put together a couple of solid drafts. I guess my question would be, how much credit do you give Brody Van Wagenen when the scouting director is still a holdover from Sandy Alderson and Tommy Tanis, who had a long run of success prior to Brody being there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the job that Tommy Tanis and Mark Tremuda have done over the last decade for the Mets drafts has been really good. You know, there were a couple of years there where people were really ripping them for the Nimmo pick, for Gavin Cecchini, when it looked like Dom Smith wasn't working out. You know, there was a lot of criticism levied against how the Mets drafted. And now you're seeing that those guys drafted really, really well over the last decade. So I think they deserve the lion's share of the credit. And certainly, they deserve more credit than Alderson does for that core of Nimmo, Conforto, Smith, and all those guys. If you're talking about what credit Van Wagenen gets for the draft, it's what they've specifically done the last 2 years in figuring out the sweet spot of how to get first-round talent beyond the first round in Matthew Allen in the third round and JT Ginn in the second round. Van Wagenen's connections in the player representation world, in the agency world, that helps him know, you know, how to get a deal done and have a high deal of confidence, a high amount of confidence on draft night that we can do this, we can pull this off. Whereas, you know, that's a strategy that the Mets had contemplated before, but it felt riskier in other years to them. And that's why they didn't necessarily try to pull it off under when Alderson was the GM. You know, there was, oh, we could try this and might be able to sign this guy. Whereas under Van Wagenen, it was, if we do this, we'll be able to get this done. And I think, you know, that strategy has paid off the last 2 years. It made sense each of the last 2 years. I don't know that it's one you want to do every year because it kind of thins out your depth when you're using seven of your first 10 draft picks on college seniors the way they did 2 years ago. But I think that's certainly an advantage that Van Wagenen brought to the draft night room and dynamic.
All right, so we'll give Brody Van Wagenen a little credit there, but it's certainly not enough to negate what we talked about previously. And to me, the Mets should be looking for a new general manager. And as you consider that hunt, you know, just looking at what's happened in the game over the last few weeks, the Phillies firing their general manager, Matt Klentak, or at least reassigning him in the organization. Billy Epler is out with the Angels. These are guys with more statistics-based backgrounds. And it seems, I know scouting staffs are getting cut around the game, but you better have a little bit of respect for that scouting aspect of the game and not just crunching the numbers and the spreadsheets and the analytics and all that. What would be the dream general manager, you think, for an organization now that is going to get a lot more analytical, you have to think, under Steve Cohen?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting, the Phillies owner John Middleton talking about the reason Klentak was reassigned slash fired. It was like, you know, we just don't draft well. We don't evaluate players well. And that is, I mean, if that's not a ringing indictment of like the entire front office, is you don't evaluate players, that's an important part of the job, Pete, is evaluating players, especially your own.
They thought Bryce Harper was pretty good. I guess they kind of got that right.
They had some positives in there when you threw money at it. Yes. I think, you know, like I said in the Van Wagenen story, I think it's someone who, you probably guess it's someone who has some pre-existing relationship with Alderson. The thing that I don't know yet at this point is how active a role Alderson wants to be. You know, there are teams who have the president of baseball operations model where that is the person making all the decisions. That is Theo Epstein in Chicago. That is, you know, Dave Dombrowski when he was in Boston. Whereas like the general manager handles kind of the day-to-day stuff, the smaller things, the minor leagues. But the president was the guy that you were going to for personnel decisions. I assume that's what Alderson will be, in which case who you hire as GM matters a little less in terms of his overall philosophy and how he steered the organization. That matters less than how he fits into how Alderson wants to steer the organization. If Alderson wants a smaller role than that, if he wants maybe a transitional kind of thing, then maybe you look towards someone who you have higher faith in becoming the guy for you relatively quickly. It wouldn't surprise me if the Mets, you know, if Alderson just kind of went, they don't need to hire a GM like that. It wouldn't be ridiculous if they didn't. The Dodgers still don't have a general manager under Andrew Friedman. The Red Sox took time when they brought in Dombrowski to hire a GM. So, I don't know exactly how I would build out the perfect candidate. It's someone who aligns with Sandy and who can carry out what he wants to do, but also has maybe some fresher ideas. I think there was the thought when Alderson was the GM the first time that the Mets weren't as innovative, even within, again, the parameters that the Wilpons allowed them to be innovative. They weren't as creative or as innovative as Alderson had been earlier in his career. And you'd want some younger blood, some newer ideas into that front office than you would have otherwise. You know, I probably don't want them to hire like J.P. Ricciardi, for instance, and just kind of get the band back together from 2010 to 2018.
I was just going to ask, you know, Paul DePodesta is all in on the Browns right now, so I don't know if he would jump back into baseball. But you also have Omar Minaya somewhere in the fold, but it seemed like there was at least a moderate power struggle or differing silos in the Mets organization with Omar kind of being a little off the beaten path, I suppose. I mean, maybe you could describe what that dynamic was better than I can.
Well, I think it's a little different. When they brought Minaya back in a couple of years ago, that was a Wilpon decision. And that, you know, wasn't...
It was a Fred decision.
Yeah, that was a Fred Wilpon decision. And I think, you know, the idea of having Omar Minaya in your front office, if you're Sandy Alderson now, probably feels a little less threatening than it did then, because Fred Wilpon isn't the one making the decisions long-term for the organization. So, and you know, I think Omar has done a decent job in the last couple of years in terms of the international scouting in the draft. That's obviously tougher to evaluate in the moment than anything else because it's so far down the line. But, you know, I think he's someone who is probably not as, like I said, not as threatening a presence in the front office as he might have been when he was first brought back.
All right. So, big picture, Brody has to go. Our opinion here on the Metrospective, and we'll get into the managerial chair and what we've learned about Luis Rojas after year one and whether or not he deserves a year two when we have our next Metrospective on Friday. Always a pleasure, Tim.
Adios, Pete.